Session number 10767, rule 9.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, Reel 9. We've run through the questions about what the conditions were like on the Labasse front. Are there any particular incidents or stories you remember from that time?
Well, we were in reserve and there were the slag heaps a couple of miles away, and we got to know that there was a bit of a show going on, and three or four of us went. And it was in the mining area, and they thought that it was in. Of course, it soon got packed, and it was given by the 2nd 7th Battalion, and they had a lieutenant. I couldn't just remember his name for a minute or two. It might come to me during my interviews. And he was a brilliant actor, and it was a good show.
What type of thing was on?
I just forget now. I just forget what it was now. But I know it was this lieutenant and what. If he had a reputation, you know, like as being a good actor and that. And
did you get many of these concert parties?
No, that was the only one I ever had. The only one I ever had. You know, there's a lot of slag heaps knocking about and that, where it was.
One thing that we didn't cover is you were on a sort of listening post, weren't you? You had a post in front of the front line.
Yeah.
What was all that about? Where was that? That you were. You mentioned it when you said that it's the snow felt. You were out in front of the line.
Oh yes. Well, that was on the left of the Orange Island Redoubt, in front of Labasse there, in front of a third. Oh yes. This listening post was. I used to always. Use my own common sense and say, what use is that? Jerry had the same thing, just a little bit of a thing. I suppose it was a warning post or something like that. But
what did it look like?
Well, it just went out in a little circle made so you could sit round, you know.
So half a dozen. About how big would it be?
Half a dozen, six. As big as this. Here, from that to here. Round here.
About 6 foot, 7 foot square.
Yeah.
And with a little trench going to the main trench.
Yes, I going out. It only went out about 15 yards, no more.
And would you, when you were on that listening post, what would you do? How long would you be out there for?
Would it be out from from dusk to dawn?
So you wouldn't be there during the day?
No.
And what were you doing there? Just sentry duty?
Just listening. See if you could hear anything at
and
all.
You couldn't see the point of it.
I'll tell you what you could hear. You could hear the rumblings of the traffic in the back of the Jerry's lines. Now, say he was going to make an attack. Well, it was a bit of a warning, that, you know, when he had a bit of traffic going along the cobble roads. You could hear.
So when did you move on from Labasse? Because the battalion was moved, wasn't it?
Mm.
To, you mentioned... to Newport. When was that?
June.
And how did you do the move? Were you marching or...?
Marched.
What was a march like that like?
I think it took us a couple of good days to get up to Newport. It was rough. It was rough.
Would you have regular halts?
Oh, you always did when you was on a route march. You'd walk 50 minutes and rest 10.
So the same as in England?
Yes.
And would you sing in France?
Hmm?
Would you...
Yes, same in France. Yeah.
And where would you stay overnight?
We stayed nowhere particularly, only on the roadside. We were on the march right there all the while.
Was it tiring?
Very.
Did people have trouble with their feet?
Oh, definitely.
Did you?
Oh, yes, but they'd have to suffer with it and keep going.
Now, what was the situation?
Well, you see, you'd have a pair of good boots on, and if you'd have a pair of good socks on, you never got anything bad with your feet. You never got anything bad with your feet, as long as you got a pair of good shoes. They were really brilliant, them boots were. They were worth the weight in gold. They were absolutely great.
They were good quality then?
Very, very good. Very tough. And comfortable.
How long would they take to wear in to your satisfaction?
Well, you never noticed that. You never thought of... it didn't take you long to... what's the name? If you got a pair of boots that hurt you, well, you go. When you got the chance, you go back to the quartermaster and tell him that you wanted a size bigger of her.
What happened when you got to Newport?
Well,
what was the situation then?
We got to Newport, and the captain said to me, we're a few miles behind. He said, "I want to go. You to go up into the line." He said, "And there's a big blockhouse, and you go through that and cross a canal." And I said, "In the river Yeezer, tidal river, you see, there's planks, you know, and everything. It went rose up, and you had to keep hold of the rope, you know, to get across and that. It was very dangerous, especially when you were carrying pulled pack and that." So he said, "And get to know all the particulars. The coilers are in the line, King's Own Yorkshire Regiment." And I eventually got there, and there was a company sergeant major, and he was in a little bit of a bivvy. I said, and I thought, "By God, that's handy." Well, the front line, it was brushwood, because somebody had opened the gates and flooded all the land for miles around. And when a shell dropped, a foot underneath the crust of the earth was water. And I said to the sergeant major, "Right, I'll just have a snooze. And when you move out, give me a kick, will you?" "Oh, yes." And then he said to himself, "I'll leave you there." And he left me. So when
How
I...
How did he do that?
Eh?
Why had he done that?
Well, he didn't care. He was more or less doing me a good turn in a way. See? Because if any give me a kick, I'd dash back to this blockhouse to lead the company up. See? So I did all... I woke up, I went to sleep, and I woke up and I could see the sun shining. So I crawled out and stood up and passed my equipment and looked up, and I was 30 yards away with the captain, Captain Maxwell. So I thought, "Oh, Lord above, I'm in for it now." So I went to him and, "Good morning, Fitz." I said, "Good morning, sir." He said, "And where have you been?" I said, "Where?" "I've been there all the time," I said, "since I came up last night." I said, "I told the company sergeant major to give me a call as he moved out, as I was going to worry back to meet you at the big house there, a big solid block of cement it was. You went through a tunnel in it." So, he says, So I said, "And he must have thought to himself, he did it on purpose, or else he forgot." I said, "I think he must have done it on purpose." So he said, "Oh, well, it doesn't matter, we're all right, we're fixed up." See, got into position. And any road, he said, what time would it be? We know it'd be about 9 or 10 o'clock, I think, when I must have woke up. And he said, "We've lost one." "Oh, Lord." I said, "Who's that?" He said, "Little Sam." He was only a little lad, you know. He said, "And you can't see a mark on him, but there's a little shell splinter gone into his windpipe.
The size of his neck.
Yeah, oh, it's the size of a pinhead, really, you know. and got in and choked him. Oh, I said, that's hard lines. And he rode, as time went on, we've been up there about a week or so, and, well, over a week, he decided to give us a dose of gas. Well, I was always quick on the uptake and getting the mask on, you know, and eventually we dwindled down to one man. The others had all gone back, leading one another, and, you know.
Which gas was it?
Mustard gas.
And what was the warning?
Only the sound of the shells exploding.
You didn't have anything to...
Oh, well, of course, it was rather too late, really, you see. Well, we used to have tins of shell cases and a bit of a poker to bang on. But...
That was too late, you felt?
Well, if he said, no need to give you a warning, when you hear a plunk go, and it's only a low explosive, and you see a cloud rise up, you know very well it's gas.
What did it look like, the cloud?
Well, it was on the yellowish-grey side, you know, grey stuff. Well, of course, it contaminated all the underneath the ground, you know, with the water being there, and it had held it there. And eventually I got reinforced by men from B Company, about a dozen men.
You were still in which company at that time?
I was A Company. I was always A Company, number one platoon, all but at my address. Number one platoon, A Company. And
these casualties from your platoon, they didn't happen all at once from the gas.
No, they dwindled day by day, you know, the effects of it, you see. If they thought that I'll have to go back, Sergeant. But, sir, all right, go on, see.
And where was it getting to?
And you'd make a note of it.
Which part of their bodies was it getting to them?
It's the throat and their eyes.
And why didn't it affect you, do you think?
Well, because I took great care that... I always took great care. I respected the gas.
So how did you take great care?
Now, a lot of them go looking for it.
You mean they got the effects deliberately?
In a sense of speaking, through neglect.
And what did you have to do to be careful? How were you careful?
Well, getting it on in time and keeping it on for a long time.
But how would that help you when it was in the ground?
Evaporated. Well, you've got the stink of it there, but not so dangerous as what it was in the first instance. And any road.
How did the. So you lost nearly all the men in your platoon?
I'd had one man, and he wasn't as big as me, and I'm not very tall, am I? And he was only young. So I said to him, do you want to go back? No, I'll wait, Mr. Sergeant, I'll wait. But not that bad. But he could hardly see and could hardly speak. So when I got made up for a day or two.
What two?
By the men from the B Company.
Had you been made Lance Sergeant yet? Because it's at Newport you were, isn't it?
Yes. I was Sergeant then, Lance Sergeant then. After I left Le Bassy. Yes.
Had you had any effect
at all?
You see,
the two sergeants, they were pals of each other. They come from Moston, Harry Farrand and I forget the other, his mate. They both come from the Moston area in Manchester. And what they'd done, and then it never dawned on me, they didn't say they were going, but they'd made application for a commission and had gone back to England. You see, and they were all going on. And I never saw them again. And that was a funny thing. They never let you know. They didn't say goodbye or look after yourself. And when we were going about out of the line, I got the Lewis gun and the panniers, emptied them and them, and I carried them. I got my revolver and I got my, glasses, and...
binoculars, you mean?
And his rifle. So I was well loaded. I stuck that round the top of my neck. I said, get hold of the other end of that gun. And off we went, and we managed to cross the Eater, which was blowing awful. And then the canal, which was a bit on the dry side. And then we walked through this here, a big, massive concrete block of tunnel under it, onto the road, and we walked almost what, about 7 miles. And it was, night was falling, and I kept turning around, "Are you all right, son?" "Yeah, I'm all right, sergeant." "Right, come on, lad." And we got to this place, it was in the sand dunes, Elephant Huts. And I said, "Oh, that must be it." So when I got there, I said to the fellow, "See to him." So I walked in the Elephant Hut and threw the blinking lot of stuff on the floor. And I just lay down and went to sleep. And when I woke up the next morning, I went out. Who should be stood there a dozen yards away but the captain, Captain Maxwell. So he said, "Good morning, Fritz." So I said, "Good morning, sir." He said, "Have you got your roll call?" I said, "Yes." I said, "How did you also go?" "Oh," he said, "he'll be on his way to England now. He should never have been up there."
That was the man who'd helped you carry this?
The young kid, really, yes. And so he said, "You're always lucky, weren't you?" I said, "Oh, yes, I was." So on any road, we waited for reinforcements and it got made up again.
How long were you waiting?
Oh, within 10 days.
And then would you go back in?
Then what?
Did you go back into the Newport line then?
No, we didn't. We didn't go back into Newport. We went to Newport Baines after that.
Before we leave Newport then, just taking you back a bit, you said that there was water a foot underneath. What did the trenches look like then? What pattern were they?
Brushwood.
Sorry?
Brushwood. Just like that fencing.
Just wooden fences then?
Yes. With clumps of, you know, this, that and the other arm.
So barricades?
You had no background to you. There's open space behind you.
So it was just like a barricade?
Yes. 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 Sorry, it was.
Was it
because you couldn't build on it. You couldn't build on it at all. You could knock a stave in, you know, and so far down, and then hammer it in to the earth underneath it, and then build up onto it. What they call brushwood. Going back to the Boer War style.
And how long had you been there altogether at Newport on the Easer?
I should say a month.
And it was
at Newport.
It was it seems to have been a fairly quiet front, except for this.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Did you have any symptoms of the gas at all?
Well, I always was bronchial, so I don't think that I could judge on that. I'm still bronchial.
It didn't burn you at all, though?
No. No.
So, now, after you got the new men into your platoon, had the other companies, or the other platoons, suffered as much?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I don't think they suffered as much as what we did.
So there was a lot of casualties?
Yes.
And what condition were the casualties in, would you say? I mean, you say it affected their eyes and...
Sickness. Burns of skin.
So you got more than this one, you got quite a lot of gas coming over day after day, did you? Or was it just this?
No, we got two big doses and it did its job.
So how you got your new men. Well, how did the new men compare with the old men? Were they worse again? Because you'd said the old lot had started to have people who weren't physically up to it.
Oh, well, as the war went on Jerry was affected just the same as what we was, of the standard of physique and age that was coming in. There was quite a good number of physically able-bodied men brought into the army. And intelligent men had good jobs, and had to forced to leave it and make the number up because we were fortunate, really, because Lord George told Earl Haig that he could have no more men because there wouldn't be any more men to make England big again.
But that was after Ypres.
Yeah.
But how about this new batch you got? How
so,
did they make
well, the Lewis Gunn section, there'd been a bit of training on it, you know. The Corporal Luck and the five men, Robinson, Swanick, Griffiths, Corporal Luck, and another fella named Upandus or something like that. And he had a gold tooth and he had a lovely ring with a big solid ring with a beautiful diamond inserted in it. And they were sat on the bank of the Yser, and we went up into the line. When we got to about a mile off the post up over to Man.
This is Newport Baines.
Newport Baines.
Mm-hmm.
We went through the houses connected with tunnels, with cellars, up and down and through, and then along the coast, which was covered, camouflage, along that we might term the prom, and to the outlet of the Yser. Well, we had a trench there, which was quite obvious to be seen anywhere, and then there was a slope down with some hoardings, railway hoardings, you've seen them with the point on, you know, leaning. And the Lewis Gunn team was sat there, you see, and they weren't in a very deep place, but they must have given their position away to Jerry by the movements and whatnot. And one morning, a shell come over and hit these hoardings, and a lad come running down, "Sergeant, Lewis Gunn team's gone west." I said, "Oh, hell." And I was only 12 yards away from them. And I went round and I saw them all and I went to the crawl over them. They were all dead and leaning on one another like that. And they were all speckled, black and red spots all over their faces. And I knew that they all were dead. And then eventually an officer come, sent word back, and the officer come. And he said, "Oh dear." So he said, "We can't do anything," he said, "until nightfall." I said, "Oh no." I said, "Right." So eventually, nightfall came, and he came early, and he brought half a dozen stretchers up with the men to carry them. And we had the sandbags, and we searched each one and put the belongings in, and the identity of the skin in each sandbag. And on this chap, Upandus or something his name was, something like that. And there were a fine body of men, these. One was a school teacher, and one was they were in good positions when they were forced to come in the army. And I have an idea that Robinson, his father, was a friend of my father-in-law. I combined that with what I knew about Robinson. Very nice chap, all of them. And when we come to this Upandus, I said, "Oh, he's got a ring here." So I said, "Oh, well, it needs hard." He said, "I can't get it off." I said, "Oh." So I got a stone and I drew it. Bayonet it out, and he said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I'm going to chop it off." "Yeah, you must." "You bloody hell," he said. "No, no, leave it." I said, "Oh, he won't feel it, I won't feel it, you'll not feel it. It only wants a tap." But he had a stone on the bayonet, and it cracked that, and it moved off. Oh, no, no. So I said, well, somebody else at the back will get it. And his boots. See? So I said, now I've been to see these graves, every one. Also, a captain of B Company, D Company. He got killed later, after we'd moved to Ypres. And I've seen all the graves of all my men, well, the majority of them, and I've got pictures of them.
Did you actually take the ring in the end?
And one day after the war, I was in the Home Guard. And I was in the local having a pint, and a chap walked in, and his name was Swanick. He was a neighbour down the road. So I said, oh, Alf, had you a brother in the army? He said, yes. So on the road, I said, a ginger-haired lad, I said, and tall. He said, that's him. I said, well, I said, I was 5 yards from him when he got killed. Get away. I said, he's bedded in Newport Paint. He said, that's right. So I said, oh, dear, 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 dear. I said, he was a nice lad. I said, I liked him. I said, there's only a short distance away from him. When one shell did it, killed a lot of them. Anyway, we're on that front. I should have told you before we went on that front.
Well, can I just finish the story about the ring? Did you actually get the ring off?
No. He wouldn't let me chop it off.
Were you going to take it to put in the bag of possessions?
Certainly.
That's what I wanted to make clear. So you weren't going to keep the ring?
Put it in his purse and or his pay book. Oh, no.
So it would go back to his family?
Yes.
No, I just wanted to make it clear, because you didn't say that.
Oh, yes. Well, anybody with any jewellery and watches and that been overlooked, and they did have a bonanza down there burying them.
So you wouldn't take them to keep for yourself?
Oh, not likely.
Would any men in the front line?
You'd have no luck if you did that.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean to say, what good is it to you? I was going to put it in the bag to send back to his people. Before we went up into the Newport Bain sector, we were down behind the line, and the captain said to me, Captain Maxwell, go up into the line, he said, and the 8th Battalion's in the line.
Of which regiment?
Of the Manchester, 2nd, 8th. There was a 2nd, 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th, 2nd, 8th, you see. And the colonel of that battalion, 8th Battalion, his name was Black. He became a general after during the Second World War. Blatherwick, he became a general in the Second World War, did that chap. And I spoke to him, and he was on the cellars there, and I said, I've come to get particulars about the swimming patrol that you send out, say, across the Yeezer. Oh, he said, right, oh, he said, tell so-and-so. So he come, he said, take this sergeant to Sergeant so-and-so. So we went up in the cellars and right along to the front line and to the spot where we were generally stayed, like, you know, in the train. So he showed me the little oval that they had where they had all the grease and this, that, the other, you know, and pouches and this. So, and he rode, and I said, do you swim with the tide and come back with the tide, like? He said, that's right. See, you get the distance for floating, you see, and you'd be naked with probably a bomb or a revolver at the back of your neck, you know, so you're trying to weigh you down. And he said, get particulars of it. So anyway, I said, and do you go out tonight? Oh, he said, we give it up, it's useless. So I said, oh, I never laughed at it, I said anything more. So anyway, when I went back, I told the captain, you know. So he said, and what about the patrol? Did they do it? I said, no, they give it up as a bad job.
Well, what were they meant to do? Swim
across to get killed.
Swim across to what?
And if you didn't kill you, they'd swim back again.
And they've given that up?
Yeah.
Did your regiment ever do it, your battalion?
No, I'm telling you, if they give it up, we're not going to do it.